eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the Helium Boys podcast. I am your host, Chris Trevino. As you know, the Helium Boys is a serious, non-serious USC podcast. I am joined by Shotgun Spratling, and this is a historic episode because you're about to hear Shotgun, but you're about to hear Shotgun in the same room as me. We are in studio together, what feels like the first time in a long time, at least doing a podcast. We've obviously done Tunnel Visions during the season together, but this is the first time we've done a podcast in what feels like 10 years, and this is the first time the Helium Boys have been podcasting together in the same room. Shotgun, I'm going to throw it over to you, but I'm literally going to get up and move into your mic space just to prove that we're in the same room.
Chris.
I'm walking.
Dude, what are you doing? This is weird. We are breaking all kinds of barriers this week. You're tapping my shoulders vehemently, I guess is what I would call that. You're playing the drums on my back.
I can see his stuff. You can hear me.
Yes.
We're in the same room.
We are in the same room. We do not have Nat sound like we Connor and I had for the Triple Double podcast. We broke barriers with that one. We did that one in person as well for the first time. We did that one on campus,
okay,
the other day. So, you know, we're just doing all kinds of stuff. When I'm in town, I just try to get as many things in, pop as many things as possible. You know, try to get some baseball, try to get some basketball, some recruiting events, football practice. Technically, I got four different sports in this weekend, so we're going.
Check in. How many fingers am I holding up?
Four, Chris.
I guess
you can stop now.
I guess you could have done that over Skype too.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one doesn't really work, but it's okay. But the fact is, you can tell me that in real time, and we don't have to worry about a lag or anything of that nature. Shotgun, we are here in this room together. We have some good stuff to talk about, but as always, this podcast starts with our patented 2-minute drill.
Oh, we patented it?
Yeah, we did. Well, the lawyer said probably can't happen.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just doing it for non-legal purposes. I'm saying patent because it sounds better than can be patented. You know what I'm saying? Can be patented 2-minute drill. Patented 2-minute drill sounds so much better. So you're actually going to be first because I'm hosting. I have the power. I can do what I want. I'm very fascinated to hear what you're going to talk about because there's a lot of things for you to talk about. So I'm just stalling until I get to my stopwatch, which I have gotten to. And if you're ready, I will ding you in.
All right, let's go.
Boom.
I think you're going to start with the women of Troy. You know, there's a lot of excitement around the football program right now and what it could be and some momentum that they're building, recruiting and everything else, and, you know, the bodies and all that stuff, you know, changing in the offseason. But that's still 6 months away. The women of Troy are in the midst of a potential three-week stretch of creating some history for the program. They just got their first win in NCAA tournament in the NCAA tournament since 2006. That's how long this program had been kind of in the doldrums, just kind of wandering in the wilderness without a true direction. Lindsey Gottlieb has provided that. And then you add someone electric like Juju Watkins, and it's been so much fun to watch this team grow as the season has gone along. From the very beginning of the season, when we saw them against Ohio State, they get a huge win in that opener in Las Vegas, was there for that. But they were terrible when Juju was not on the court. She got in foul trouble, and they had a big lead, and it disappeared real quick. That was not the case in the Pac-12 tournament. It was not the case in the NCAA tournament the other day. You know, you even saw it was such a great and awesome moment, and why we love college sports, to hear walk-on senior guard India Otto, the crowd chanting for her with 3 minutes left or so. She gets in with about 2 minutes left. She hits a bucket, her first two-point bucket of her career, fifth-year senior. You know, obviously she doesn't play much, but first two-point bucket. And then the next possession, you get a block, lead the fast break, underhand toss to her, screener goes underneath to create some space. She drains the triple. The entire bench kind of like, it was like one of those, you know, the classic meme where the black kid with the glasses and everyone's just going crazy around him type of thing. Everyone on the bench kind of crouched down and was grabbing their teammate as that shot was in the air. It swishes through. The place goes crazy. Pandemonium. It was awesome.
Okay. First in-person two-minute drill. Not too shabby. Not too shabby. I think you went 1 second.
No, it didn't.
You went 1 second
nailed
over.
It.
We're both in the room. No need to lie.
Nailed
no need
it.
To lie. So, yeah, congrats, Shotgun. You just did the first in-person two-minute drill, patented two-minute drill. In person, how do you feel?
Feel all right. I could have gone much longer on that. That was such an awesome moment.
Well, we're going to talk about the women of Troy later, so save some in the tank.
All right, let's get to your two-minute drill, Chris. What do you got starting now?
Well, there is a lot of things I could talk about, and this is actually going to be hard because Shotgun is at a different angle than me, so I have to fully turn my body to see. It's okay. I don't need it full running. I want to talk a little bit about USC's recruiting, how molten hot they were. That's actually going to be our first topic for this show, but just bang, 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 bang. Five bangs, five kabooms, including, you know, a five-star defensive lineman like Justice Terry. Anything is possible under Coach Henderson, as the kids are saying. You know, we knew Coach Henderson was going to have impact, but I didn't think it was going to be impact this quickly, this far off the rip. I mean, this is only March. Recruiting battles are not won in the month of March. They're won in fall, late fall, and then obviously in December with the signing period. So USC obviously getting all these guys is great. Good momentum. Good energy, good juice, crawfish juice, you know, from the seafood boil over the weekend, but you still got to close out. Now USC has to play defense with these guys because, you know, the Georgias and the SECs of the world are not going to like that USC is getting all their talent out of the South. So USC is going to have to play some serious defense. We're going to see what that NIL really looks like as we move forward with these months, and these guys are taking more visits and unofficial visits and official visits over the summer, but you know, great momentum, great stuff to love there. And I know the USC fan base is really happy. My last 30 seconds, I'm just going to dedicate to what I saw when I walked in here for this podcast. Shotgun was sleeping on an air mattress. I thought I was walking into a saw trap, Shotgun. I was terrified. I thought this was a test. I thought balloons were going to fall from the ceiling. I didn't know what was going to happen. He said, be here at 9:30 for the show. It was 9:27 when I walked in. He is fast asleep. And number one rule, if you ever come across a sleeping Shotgun, whatever you do, do not wake him up. It's bad news. Look at that. 2 minutes on the dot. Bam. I'm out. Yes, we're done. We can just leave, right?
I don't sleep very often, so I do not like being awoken unless it's time for the show, which it was. I heard you rustling around. I got about a 20-minute nap. I got up at 5 this morning to get some content up on the site and get going because there's so much going on. I have not been able to sleep very much this weekend. There's been a lot of work. Still got a lot more work to do. Ton of photos to cut from the Under Armour camp that we were both at. We'll talk about that a little bit. You know, already put photo galleries up of the little bit of practice that we got to see on Thursday. Just finished putting up a photo gallery of the Women of Troy's first round game. We'll have another one of those tonight because they will play at 7 p.m. against against Kansas, because Michigan blew it. Getting outscored, I think, 35-17, 35-18 in the fourth quarter and overtime of that game. But, you know, there's been a lot going on around campus. And so, you know, this is a day, there's so much going on, that air mattress will probably get used again, because you guys are probably going to go for a two-star composite podcast. You guys are doing an early one this week.
Yeah.
And with as much as just happened, I can't imagine you guys going anywhere less than 3 hours.
You know, when you say it, like, I know it's coming, but, like, when you say it out loud, like, knowing I have 5:30 a.m. practice tomorrow, I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional.
Getting trepidation.
I'm really, like, my eyes are welling up. Just the thought of it. Like, I'm not ready. I'm scared. I'm terrified. But you know what? This is grinding. This is dog work, as Coach Henny would say. And I think that springboards us into our first segment, which is just USC being absolutely molten lava on Sunday with five kabooms all on Sunday throughout the span of the day, kicking off with five-star Justice Terry out of Manchester, Georgia. And then you got four-star Isaiah Gibbs out of Warner Robins, Georgia. And then you got 2026 cornerback Dominic Kelly out of Tampa Bay, Florida. And then four-star Hilton Stubbs out of Mandarin, Florida, 2025 safety, a.k.a. Hilton Drake Stubbs. And then you end the day with currently unranked Lake Travis, Austin, Texas, defensive lineman Gus Cordova. So you get five bangs on Sunday. Your 2025 recruiting class jumps from, I think it was like 56, 57, maybe even 59, all the way up to number 16 in the nation for 2025 to go on top of Julian Lewis, who for the longest time had just been the only commitment in 2025. I would say USC fans would gladly take this 2025 drought that they've had with just Julian Lewis in 2025 when you get five-star Justice Terry, the number one edge rusher in the class in the 24/7 sports rankings, in Isaiah Gibson, and then a four-star safety out of Florida in Hilton Stubbs, and then Gus Cordova to give you five commitments in 2025. I think they would have gladly taken this drought knowing you were going to get a day like this in the spring.
I mean, it was an epic day, and hopefully the USC fans were, you know, not out doing something else, and they were able to be locked into the peristyle because that news just kept flowing yesterday. You know, we were out at the Under Armour event, and it was a constant barrage for us of, you know, someone's hearing something, something might happen, someone has popped, their commitment has gone live, and, you know, that was throughout the entire day. Chris is writing stories at the Under Armour camp of a couple of the commitments. We're trying to get quotes and stuff from people while we're at the camp that visited over the weekend, and then other, you know, trying to get people on the phone. A lot of stuff going on. We'll have a ton of content from the camp as well. We've got a couple things already up on the site. But, yeah, it was an incredible day for them, especially with how much they have struggled on the recruiting trail and how long there's been this kind of gap. You know, it's been basically 3 months since they've had any commitment. Actually almost 4 months since it's April, you know, basically since January when, you know, you start looking at transfer portal guys and stuff coming in is the last time you're really getting any commitments. And, you know, that's a while back. You know, you start looking at the actual high schoolers and, well, who's the last one? Madden, I think. And that was November. So, you know, you got a full 5 months where you don't get a commitment. Like that's you're freezing out in the cold if you're a USC fan. Like, what's going on here? And then suddenly you're like, oh, the volcano has erupted, and there's just heat coming from everywhere on the Sunday, starting super early. I woke up, I think, at 5 yesterday or 4:30, and Justice Terry, Steve Wiltfong, had just tweeted out his story, and that commitment had just popped, you know, at 4 in the morning or something, 4:20. So huge get for USC there. the fact that you go into Georgia and get a five-star lineman is really impressive. Now, you got to hold on to him. We've seen this before. They had Mykael Williams, and then there was the potential of them adding I'm blanking on his name now. I went and saw him. The other defensive lineman from Georgia.
Yes.
But, you know, so they were building momentum there, and they had a terrible season that never happened. You know, he ends up flipping to Georgia. But it's not just they went in and did and got a commitment. It's they went in and flipped a commitment from Georgia, which has been a school that's frankly them and Michigan have been producing the most defensive linemen consistently over the last half decade. You know, USC, I mean, Georgia's back-to-back national championship was built. Those two teams were built on those defensive lines with Jordan Davis and, you know, all the players that were there that were so good that Bear Alexander left because he wasn't going to get, you know, full playing time. He wasn't going to be a full-time starter and came to USC where he's, you know, a star on the USC defense. So that's how good their defense has been. They've just consistently turned out, you know, guy after guy after guy. So for them to go in and take one from Georgia says even more about that commitment to me. And you know, they just built everything built from there, which tells you how well received the Low Country Boil, the Southern Boil, the Crawfish Boil, whatever you want to describe it as, the weekend recruiting visit was. You know, it really was impactful for a lot of guys, and you get two five stars. I'm calling Isaiah Gibson a five star. He's in the top 20.
He's in the top 32. Yeah, I mean, 32 five stars every year. He's number 17 in our rankings. Yeah. He's much lower in the composite, but yeah, we say five star range, but yeah, you can call it a five star.
So two five star defensive linemen from Georgia, two commitments from Florida, and then a kid from Texas. So like, you're hitting all the hot spots of recruiting. Now, what that means, a lot of teams recruit there, so that means there's going to be a lot of competition to hold on to those commitments. But that's super impressive that it's not like, hey, these are just local guys that you were able to lock up. These are guys you went out and were able to get in, you know, the recruiting hotbeds across the country. So super impressive day, and USC, can they build on it now? And I think the big thing is, next week, who's coming in, Chris?
Julian Lewis.
Yes, your five-star quarterback is coming to visit next week. You know, Connor Morsett said on our Tunnel Vision show we had last night that he had received word from a source that Julian Lewis's dad, TC, was, you know, really impressed by what USC had done on Sunday, which, of course, everyone should be impressed by what USC had done on Sunday. But I think that is a great opportunity to build that momentum into his visit, lock him up, you know, so that he doesn't want to go anywhere else. Let him know that, hey, we're building everything around you. We're getting these other Georgia boys to come in. We're getting your defensive linemen, so the defense is going to play better. So you're not going to have to be forced to do everything. You're not going to be Superman like Caleb Williams had to try to be last year. And, you know, that's the things that are building this roster up to potentially become a college football playoff regular, and especially with expanded field, and then potentially a national championship quality team.
Yeah, and we didn't want to spend too much time on this topic because I know you spoke about it on the live show yesterday, Sunday night, which you can find that on YouTube. And then I'm about to do, not even joking, probably like 9 hours on all these guys later tonight for the composite two-star. So by the time you listen to this, it might already be up. I don't know when we're dropping this. I don't know what the rules are when we're together.
We'll try to get this one up as soon as possible, and then that way there's a little bit of breathing room before you guys go so people can listen to this. We just want to kind of give our thoughts quickly on that because Gerard and you are going to go way more in-depth on these guys. What's the biggest thing that stands out to you, though, about the guys that they got? I thought we had an interesting question on Tunnel Vision last night, and maybe I'll pose it to you. It was basically saying, do you see anything do the guys that they got committed in their skill sets and what you know about them? I don't know how much you know about each of them. I didn't get a chance to watch a ton of videos on these guys because of how much was going on, but we'll be doing that this week. But from what you know of these guys, does it their skill set tell you anything about what the defense may look like going forward?
I mean, again, I haven't really done my homework on them in terms of watching other film quite yet. I was going to do that later tonight, so I can't really speak to that. But knowing what we know about like Justice Terry and then Isaiah Gibson and then Hilton Stubbs, these guys are super athletic, and it just kind of fits the profile of these multi-sport athletes. Like Isaiah Gibson's a multi-sport athlete. Mm-hmm. Justice Terry went like viral for being an eighth grader and seeing his athletic frame as an eighth grader. And then Hilton Stubbs is just like one of the most athletic safeties you can find, playmaker all over the field. So just with those guys alone, you know, you're recruiting out of the South, so you're going to get some athletes. But this defense seems like they're building, and these offers that I'm seeing, especially with like linebackers, they're offering these tall, rangy linebackers who play multiple sports. Look at a Jaden Walker that they signed. Look at a Desmond Stevens that they signed. Look at Elijah Newby that they signed. They're going after athletes, and they're not necessarily pigeonholing them to spots. They're like, let's just get the best athletes we can find, build them up, and we'll see where their bodies grow, and they'll take us, and then we'll fit them in where they fit in this defense best. So I just think they're just going after athletes and multi-sport athletes, and I'm excited to watch these guys more on film later today. But again, when you're going in the South, you're going to be getting some impressive specimens, and you know, a lot of these guys fit that bill.
What's interesting to me is that, you know, you got two guys on the defensive line that are, you know, elite. These aren't the trench tanks, though. Justice Terry, 6'5", 275 is what he's listed at. Isaiah Gibson, 6'4", 245. Now, Gibson is the number one edge, I believe, and Terry is the number one defensive lineman. But, you know, so it's not necessarily that these are 340-pound guys that USC is going to get. I know they're going in the South and they're getting guys, but they're not the biggest guys in that regard. So these are more athletes. These are guys, quick twitch, that can get to the quarterback, that type of thing, rather than just being, you know, your big body guy that just eats up blocks and stuff. Now, maybe Justice Terry, by the time he gets to USC, by the time he plays in a game, from seeing some of the gains we've seen from the freshmen that have come in, maybe he's at 300 pounds at that point. Maybe he's at 290 or 300 or whatever. So I'm not going to say that he can't become a 300-pounder, but it's not like he's Isaiah Rakes out there. He's not going to be that nose guard just coming in. These are guys that are going to be quick twitch guys that are going to be trying to get to the quarterback, more like the Murphy twins and Leatu Alatu from last year's defense for Denton Lynn at UCLA.
And don't be mistaken, they are recruiting those massive guys out of the mm-hmm. South as well. You look at a Kevin Wynn, the Georgia defensive lineman, 6'2", 320 pounds. He's going to be coming in for a visit. And then Malik Altry, who is a Auburn commit, same frame, 6'5" and 320 pounds. So they're going after those big bodies as well, in addition to, you know, a guy like Justice Terry, who is a specimen at these measurables that you just listed. And yeah, probably going to put on some more weight by the time he gets to college, whether that's, you know, fingers crossed for USC fans, USC at the end. But yeah, they're getting the body types they want, and we know going to the Big Ten, they want to get bigger. This isn't the era of undersized linemen for USC. They need those big bodies to compete in the Big Ten, to play for Eric Henderson, to get to the NFL. So yeah, that's what they're going after.
Yeah, so we'll see you know, how they continue to build the class, if they can get some of those big bodies to you know, to close out that defensive line, you know. But if you can hold on to to Justice Terry and Isaiah Gibson, that's a great start. You know, you got basically your 3-tech and your 5-tech there, and now if you can add someone down over the center, you know, you're moving forward quickly with building the defensive line the way you're looking to have it for the future.
All right, we're going to move out of the recruiting portion of this podcast. But very quickly, Shotgun, what are your thoughts on seafood boils?
I don't eat seafood, really. So
okay, then.
I love the corn on cob and stuff that's in there, the veggies and potatoes and whatnot, but I don't eat a lot of seafood. They're always fun. You know, those type of things, the jambalaya gatherings or gumbo. Like, if there's a large pot of food being cooked and everyone's standing around it, count me in.
I also just remembered, I forgot to say, that I actually have the soundboard because we're in person, so I can use sounds for this podcast.
That sounds like trouble.
None of them actually like fit what we're talking about. We are going to talk about the first week of spring camp, because you were actually out there for practice. You were there for Thursday. I've been there, you know, Tuesday, Thursday. We were not covering Saturday practice. Those are closed to the media. And then we're back at it this week, or I'm back at it this week, as I mentioned, with the 5:30 practice. But I can get Shotgun's thoughts on what he saw.
Though we did have some ghost notes from Saturday's practice.
I cannot confirm or deny that.
If you're a member of the Peristyle.
I like those.
I don't know. So, Shotgun, you were taking photos all day on Thursday. Not all day, but in that 15-minute span and out of the tunnel. I just wanted to get your opinion on who impressed you early on in spring camp. Because, you know, we look at the whose bodies are changing and newcomers and all that. So, who impressed you this week?
So, you know, every year we see some guys get bigger. But it just feels like it's across the board much more consistent this year. I think it is one thing that really stood out to me. And, yeah, guys look bigger, and you guys had already talked about it on a Tuesday. It didn't really sink into me until Braylon Shelby came over and spoke to the media, because same distance that I'm away from him when I'm running on the sidelines and I go behind the bench type of thing, you know, you're 5 feet away from the players. So you see him up close in those type of situations. So seeing him up close like that, he was the same size as he was last year, except last year he was in shoulder pads, and this time he was not wearing shoulder pads. Like, that's how much thicker his chest and his shoulders have gotten, his back, his upper back, that it looked the same size as when he was wearing shoulder pads last year. And that's someone who came in and was already a specimen last year. So that really stood out to me. And, you know, just listening to the players and the coaches talk about, you know, how they're trying to attack it and all that stuff, and listening to Jamil Muhammad talk about how he's bigger and, you know, everyone, those all definitely, that definitely stood out. And then as we were leaving the field, I said hello to Eric Gentry and shook his hand. And just from his grip, I could tell that he's stronger. And seeing his shoulders, I thought, you know, that really stood out to me. You know, he's got that huge wingspan, but he's been thin, right? Well, his shoulders don't look thin anymore to me. Like, it just looks like there's a thickness there that wasn't there before. I think he's probably gained 15, 20 pounds. I know last year he did the same, and he probably lost some weight during season. So, you know, can he maintain it? That will be a big thing. But if they can put that weight on him, which should help him stay healthier, and then listening to Dent and Lynn talk about how he's excited about the possibilities of Eric Gentry, the fact that he's so unique that he's excited to see what he can do with him type of thing, rather than him being, you know, some coaches like, oh, I don't know what to do with this guy. Lynn is excited to be creative. I'm looking, you know, we've been waiting for Eric Gentry to really break out. We got all the stock that's possible over here on the Helium Boys podcast. And yeah, I think it's only going to finally come to fruition this year. Under Danton Lynn, I have a lot of confidence in that, and seeing him be thicker was really impressive there. So those guys definitely stood out. I mean, the freshman Cameron Fountain as well. You mentioned him as you know an off the bus guy for you. Well, I actually saw him in the fall. I went and saw him. I talked to him after a game, and so it wasn't, oh, this is a kid from Georgia, and that's what the narrative was. Oh, these kids from Georgia, and, you know, these kids from the South, they're just so much bigger when they come in. No, this is the strength staff doing this. He looks completely different to me. He had a great physique at, you know, when I saw him in high school, you know, when I went to his game. Not saying that he didn't, but he looked very similar to a cut-up modern-day guy or something. And it wasn't like he was, you know, this giant monster of a man, but now he kind of looks like that. And that's Benny Weil and his staff. So we've got to give credit to the strength staff when it is due to them. You know, it's not this slim down. You know, it's not guys losing weight. We're wondering, why is this certain player losing weight when they probably should be adding? And then you start wondering, where are they actually going to play? Because, you know, they're probably best when they add some weight and go to a different position. Like, that was what last offseason was. How are they going to hold up on the defensive line? And then you add in players like Isaiah Rakes, and the fact that he's wearing number 2, it makes it even more.
Makes your head spin?
It's kind of humorous to watch it. You know, you love seeing a big guy in a little number, at least I do. And, you know, it just makes the body type pop even more when there's just a single digit on there. But you're basically going from, if he proves to be the starter, he's what, listed at 320, I think. Last year's starter was Stanley Ta'afu, listed at 270, I think, or 275. Like, that's a 50-pound difference. And that's how can you unlock Bear Alexander? How can you let him get more one-on-one opportunities? It's having a trench tank like Isaiah Rakes take up two blocks and be a guy that can cause some havoc himself if you try to go one-on-one. So that is a huge difference to me. And Lincoln Riley, we talked about this on the show on Tunnel Vision. It's like Lincoln Riley talked about how the defensive line has gained 340 pounds. I would love to see that breakdown and figure out how exactly the math is working there. Are we counting like the 50 pounds that, you know, when we're transferring Isaiah Rakes in place of Stanley Taufu, is that counting, or is it just straight gains for the guys since January? I don't know exactly, but it's definitely impressive to see how much bigger these guys are across the board versus, you know, what we've seen in the past, where we've seen some guys get bigger, and those are the guys we would always point out. But, you know, this was definitely a different approach this season. You could tell there was definitely a different approach.
Two things. I'm worried that your comment about Eric Gentry's hand grip is going to be like the new booming punts. The hand grips were a lot tighter. They're a lot tighter out there. I foresee the meme of it. That's just my little comment. And to throw it back, Shotgun, if you remember one of my jokes from our Family Feud days, short and stocky, safety, Isaiah Rakes in the number two, you know, two is a safety ass number. You know, we're getting a little closer. We're inching a little closer to having that short and stocky safety out there. I just want to let you know. I don't know if you remember that bit, but
Peely, baby.
We're right there. We're circling right. We're circling the drain on it. So, yeah, I just want to mention that because I don't really have anything to add in terms of what you said, because you're masterful when it comes to talking, and you got all those points out there. But I was interested to hear what your thoughts were on Cameron Fountain because, yeah, you saw him early in his – you saw him in his senior year. You went out there. You told me you were impressed. Also, you got some crispy photos of him. I don't tell you that enough, but those photos you got at Cameron Fountain, I see them every time in the back end. They're so good. I love using those Fountain photos for any piece I do on him. Not so much anymore now that he's a Trojan, but yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they look like even more in the summer. You know, what those guys look like in the summer, and there'll be more freshmen, so the team will be rounded out. I do kind of want to talk a little bit about glaring holes, because I think it's apparent that there is still big holes on this team. I still think they need another tackle. They need another experienced tackle. They definitely need multiple wide receivers. There's only seven right now. You're not bringing anyone in the summer, so you need to do something to get more bodies in there, given that you have limited scholarship space. I think they need another big defensive tackle. They're adding two more defensive lineman bodies in the summer, but you still need another veteran guy to use as part of your rotation. And they definitely need another running back because Woody Marks looks good, you know, but you have three freshmen behind him, excuse me, two of them being redshirt freshmen. So those right now are still the glaring holes that USC needs to fill now that we got like a week of spring practice under our belts and their belts.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some depth issues on the team. The one that stands out to me the most is at tackle. You know, we had talked about throughout the offseason on the peristyle of our expectation being Jonah Monheim was moving to center. That's what we had been told, what we had been hearing. And Lincoln Riley confirmed it on the radio show on Monday. When you do that, you lose your left tackle. And you're already losing, you know, your right tackle and Jarrett Kingston being gone and Michael Tarquin transferring. So anyone who had tackle experience, the only one left is Mason Murphy. And he struggled, so they moved him to guard. Now he's back at right tackle. They need him to take a big jump forward. He's the guy that needs to take a big jump forward. Elijah Page, apparently, you know, throughout the season was building up and, you know, he looked pretty good in the Holiday Bowl. Solid start for him there. Now, can he build on that and can he truly take over the left tackle spot? That's, you know, a question mark too. But you feel hopeful for those guys, but you don't feel confident in either spot. At least I do not. And then if one of those guys doesn't get the job done or one of those guys goes down, what's your next option? That is a big question mark. So, yeah, and everyone says, yeah, I keep reading in our articles and stuff, you know, that people are writing, and it's like they'll go out and get someone in the transfer portal. It's not that easy, though. It's a tackle. Left tackles don't go in the transfer portal unless there's a big NIL deal that's been brokered behind the scenes, basically, or you're Caden Proctor, who just bounces back and forth and takes some NIL money from Iowa whenever he can. You know, tackles are rare in the portal, and they go really quick. So you can't just be like, yeah, we'll grab a tackle. Like, they're just growing on trees out there. So if you do get someone, they got Michael Tarquin last year, and he struggled. So if you get someone, and that's a guy with Power 5 starting experience, and he played some guard as well at Florida, but, you know, someone who played a tackle in the SEC, and you expect him to be able to come in and, you know, slide right in, not necessarily the case. Jarrett Kingston struggled at times as well. You know, he bounced around different spots on the line. You know, even before that, the kid from Virginia, Bobby Haskins, like, he was, you know, he came in and did a good job for them, but, you know, the plug and play is not a guarantee. And those are the guys you're getting. You're getting guys that aren't elite guys. You're getting guys that are serviceable, and hopefully you can, you know, coach them up that next level so that they can be quality for you. But yeah, they need some more bodies there, or they just need guys to take a huge step forward over this offseason. And, you know, whether it be Mason Murphy, whether it be Elijah Page, along with Tobias Raymond, and, you know, maybe one of these freshmen has to come in and be the fourth guy as a tackle. But that's, you're getting in a very, very danger zone there if you're relying on Kalolo Taaga. Is that what we said?
Mm-hmm.
Kalolo Taaga to step in there as a guy who's very, very raw. Or, you know, if Tobias Raymond, we have not seen, he's gained weight, and that it looks good as far as the growth of his body. We don't know if he can move yet. We haven't got a chance to really watch him, you know, do any actual blocking of defensive linemen. That's not really allowed at practice for us to see. So, you know, if he gets thrown in the mix, are we comfortable thinking that he's going to be able to just step in? I have a hard time. I think it's a big danger zone. So that's the biggest area that really concerns me, is seeing that tackle depth after you move Jonah Monheim.
Yeah, I keep going kind of back and forth in my mind about the move for Monheim to center, because I understand why they did it, because they need a center. Center is obviously very important, but so is your tackle spots. And he is a really, really good tackle. But also, it seemed like they were setting up to move Jonah inside anyway this season, mm-hmm. because that's where his best NFL prospects are. They're not a tackle. He's not an NFL tackle. He is a guard. And I guess Josh Henson, you know, Josh Henson is the center whisperer. That's his specialty. Sees him as a potential NFL center. So they're going to get him that experience. So if you were going to move him inside anyway and you need a center, that makes sense on paper, but you're also trying to fill a big hole and then creating another big hole at tackle. So you better be sure you're going to get someone, aka, you know, Marcus Bryant still floating around the portal. That would be a monster home run and would shut everyone up about the offensive line, your plug and play left tackle right there. But again, you have to go and get him. You have to sign him. You have to get him on campus, and a lot of other teams are trying to do the exact same thing. So it's going to be tough, but if you pull that off, I see the vision. I see the vision. But if you don't, you're in a real tough spot. And again, we don't know who's going to be in the portal come spring. We'll see who jumps in defensively and obviously with the offensive tackle spot. But as of right now, it looks like a glaring deficiency, because I know Elijah Page, I have a lot of stock in Elijah Page, but is he ready to be thrown into the fire? If you get a tackle that you can bring in and have him ease into it at right tackle, obviously that's what the hope is for, and then you can kick him out to left tackle when he's ready, aka next season, to take over that spot. But again, I think you need to, above all, find a tackle, go get Marcus Bryant, whatever, because as the line is constructed right now, I would be a little worried about it. I know Miller Moss, you know, he gets the ball out really quick, so that helps too. Being a guy who just makes his reads, finds it, guts it, lets it go, doesn't hold on to the ball. He's not going to, you know, try to keep the play alive. He's just going to get the ball out quick. That does take a little more pressure off the offensive line. But again, you're going to the Big Ten. You need a stout offensive line. So we'll have to see what it looks like. And I keep going back and forth on the move to Mannheim because he's obviously USC's best offensive lineman. And so I get it. I see it. I see what you're trying to do. But you better make sure you shore up tackle one way or another moving forward.
Yeah, and Marcus Bryant, for anyone who doesn't know, is the three-year starter from SMU. Played left tackle the last 2 years, played right tackle in 2021. So, you know, he was an all-conference player as well. So he's a guy that is highly coveted out there because he is a left tackle.
Isn't he 6'9 or something like that?
6'8, 318 is what he's listed at. Pretty good size there. But, yeah, if you can go get him and then you can shift Elijah Page to the right side, that makes – and then you can shift Mason Murphy inside – because right now, right guard is a big question mark, especially with Gina Quinones not able to go during the spring. Lincoln Riley announced that he, Zion Branch, and Lake McCree would all be full go in fall camp, though Lake McCree may be a little bit later behind the other guys who should be able to start fall camp and ready to go. But Quinones is missing those opportunities to get those reps beside Jonah Mannheim and between, you know, Mason Murphy, if that ends up being the end of lineup. I think the move for Mannheim had to be made, and the reason why is because basically he'd been told that, and basically that's the reason why he came back, is so that he can get more tape there and prove himself for the NFL and keep your word. You know, you got to keep your word with your players and say, you know, this is what's best for you, and we know that's why you're coming back for this year to be able to get it. Otherwise, Mannheim might have left after last year, whether it be to go somewhere else to get interior reps or just go straight to the NFL. He knows what his position is and they know what his best position is. And sometimes you got to do right by the player, even if it's not the number one thing for the team.
Very true. Very true. And an important part of this puzzle piece, as you talk about, which is if you told him, hey, if you come back, we're going to move you inside so you can get more tape there, then you have to do it. Like straight point blank, you have to do it. So that's also a very important piece. Chuck,
it is a little concerning that, again, this year you're moving guys in different spots. So it's not like you have any consistency there. Last year it was like, oh, you do have Mannheim returning. You do have Dedich returning. But both those guys were in new spots. This year you got one guy that's in the same spot, Emmanuel Pregnon, from where the season ended last year at least. Mason Murphy has played right tackle before, so that's not necessarily new. But so you have one solidified starter back in the same spot he was, even though you do have three, you know, returners on the line. So that is something that is a little bit of concern as well, because last year it ended up not working out so well for him.
All right, Shotgun, we're going to move out of spring because I know we are on a schedule for this show, and I promised you that we were going to talk about the Women of Troy later in the show. I know you spent your 2-minute drill on that, but I know you have more to say. But ladies, the ladies got a big win over the weekend, first round of the NCAA tournament. Number one seed getting to host at the Galen Center. Good crowd, looked like it on the TV. I was watching on TV. I know you told me in person it was a good crowd. They play again tonight against Kansas. And Shotgun, take it away.
Yeah, should be a kind of an intriguing matchup for USC in that the fact that Kansas is a team that has veterans. They have a 6'6 center and Tiana Jackson, who is a 3-4 year starter for them. They have 2 6-year senior guards that I don't think they're going to be fazed by the environment. You know, they played in big time environments in the Big 12 at Texas and Oklahoma and some other places. So I don't think that they're going to be, you know, overwhelmed by that. So USC has to come out and execute, and they have to play well. And, you know, Kansas showed, you know, what they're capable of coming back against Michigan. I think it would have been a different matchup against Michigan because Michigan had some bigger bodies down low. So I was curious to see how that was going to match up for USC. But instead, you know, the Trojans will get Kansas, and, you know, they got to take care of business, because we just saw, if you watched any of the women's tournament last night, you saw Stanford get taken to the brink by Iowa State. They had to go into overtime. They were able to win that. Ohio State gets beat by Duke. That's in the same bracket as USC. So if things now go chalk, it is it will be USC versus UConn in the Elite Eight. Now, that's a long step away. If USC wins, they will play Baylor. Baylor defeated Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech was without their All-American, Elizabeth Kitley. She had an ACL injury. That game, I can't remember if it went to overtime or it was just like in the last, I think it went to overtime as well, or it was in the last seconds. That was a very competitive game. Baylor, obviously, has, you know, national championships in the past under Kim Mulkey with Brittany Griner and whatnot. So they're a program that has had success. But USC is playing great basketball right now. They had a two-week layoff, basically, and came out, and you always wonder, okay, how is it going to be when they get out there? Is it going to they come on out flat? Or do they look rusty? And Juju Watkins turned the ball over on the first possession. And Texas A&M Corpus Christi goes down and scores. They take the first lead of the game. USC scored the next 21 points, and the game was pretty much over after that. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, give them credit. Their first ever NCAA tournament. They had a good number of fans travel. That was really cool to see. They have a unique Spanish connection. They have like four or five girls that are from Spain. It was a fun matchup. They went on a run in the second quarter, went on like a 9-2 run or 11-2 run, and then USC scored 9 straight points, and the game was over. USC's put up 35 points in the third quarter of the game alone. So, you know, Juju Watkins had 23 points. Mackenzie Forbes had 23 points. Both of them were efficient. Rhea Marshall had another double-double. And then the big moment at the end, the moment that got everyone the loudest throughout the entire game, probably the loudest since USC played UCLA at home, was India Otto hitting back-to-back buckets and scoring 5 points. Not a career high, I find out. She had 2 threes in a game a couple years ago, but 5 points for her was really cool. The entire bench was going crazy. Shows you how much this team cares about each other as well, that as she's driving the lane, everyone on the bench stands up. They're excited to see it. It's not like anyone's waiting to see if the basket goes in. They're all excited. They stayed standing the entire time, the next possession, and then when she made the three, the building was loud and rocking, but the bench was kind of pandemonium over there. They were all jumping, going crazy. They were trying to usher them back towards the sideline type of thing. And then as the final clock was winding down, they were like waiting to try to tackle India, and the coaches were like trying to keep them off the court, but referee was even smiling about it. Like, that's the kind of moment, like, it's what college sports is all about. So it's really cool to see that. And for her to be able to go into the press conference afterwards, you know, the first time she's ever been in a press conference, a post-game press conference like that. And, you know, she said she got literal goosebumps going back down the court. And it was just a really cool moment. So that was fun. But now the competition gets harder. Now you play Kansas, the team from the Big 12, you know, a team that can challenge USC with Tiana Jackson's link down low. She's their all-time leading shot blocker in school history. Their guard that hit the three-pointer late is a six-year senior. She has played 1,000 more minutes than anyone in program history. Like, that's how much she has played while at Kansas. So she's been through kind of everything there. She's not going to be fazed by USC's or by the crowd. So USC is going to have to go out and win that game. It's not going to be something where, you know, Kansas is going to be shell-shocked or anything. But USC is playing really well right now, and they just got to continue what they're doing. And if they do, they will play in Portland next week in the Sweet 16, where they would play Baylor. If they were to win that, they would likely play UConn. UConn will be playing against Duke, and I'm going to give UConn the advantage there. Well, UConn has to win today. Let me take that back. UConn has to beat Syracuse today, but because Syracuse is where Connor Morissette went, UConn obviously will win that game, and then they would play Duke next week.
Shotgun, you know who also has to keep doing what they're doing?
I don't know.
You, as the world's greatest USC basketball beat writer. Your talents were wasted on the men's team this year, essentially, but at least the women of Troy have given new life to your basketball coverage skills this season as a number one seed and trying to make a deep run. Shotgun, you're going to be at the game tonight. Everyone's going to be at the game tonight.
Yeah, we'll have Ahmad there. We'll have Connor there. You know, some great pieces from those guys the last couple days. Ahmad wrote about Lindsey Gottlieb today, a piece, and she was just named a finalist for the Naismith Coach of the Year Award, one of four finalists. Connor wrote about Juju Watkins, her generous talent. Didn't even mention Juju Watkins broke the single game or single season record, broke Cheryl Miller's record, scoring record at USC. That's just is eye popping. It's head shaking for that to happen as a freshman. And it was awesome that Cheryl Miller was there in attendance. She has shown so much love to this team. They've shown so much love back. And, you know, that synergy has been really cool between the alums and the current players. Caleb Williams was there. John Jackson was there with Caleb. You also had the Bryant family, Vanessa and the girls were all there. So, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., former USC player that played in Cleveland when Lindsey Gottlieb was a coach there, he came back to watch the women of Troy as well. So a lot of people were, and who knows who will be in attendance today. There's been so many random celebrities kind of showing up throughout the year, from Kevin Hart to LeBron to anybody else. So we'll see who comes out to see Juju and the Ivies and the rest of the squad. Should be really fun, and we'll have you guys covered on that on uscfootball.com. And then you know, we'll have photos, we'll have video. We had instant analysis the other day. We'll have that again tonight. Should be fun. Should be a good matchup, though. And then, since you mentioned the men's team, do have to say it's an eventful week for them too.
Sure.
You know, their season ends, the transfer portal opens, and we've seen a couple players go in there, a couple players that could be expected. Kajani Wright going in, you know, as kind of the fourth big on the team. And then Ozias Sellers, you know, a little bit disappointing to me because I think he's going to break out next year. I think he's going to get an opportunity to play more, and his confidence just grew and grew as the season went along. So I think he's going to be really good next year. He's gone to the portal. And then the one I was told the day that we did the Triple-Double podcast, I was told that Kobe Johnson would be going through the draft process but was not expecting to enter the transfer portal. And then less than 12 hours later, he was in the transfer portal. So that's how quickly things can move sometimes, as well as information can change. So that is a big blow to USC if he does not end up coming back, which, you know, not often that happens, but it does happen a little bit more in basketball than other sports, where guys will both enter the transfer portal and do the draft process, and sometimes will come back to their school. So if he leaves, though, that's a huge piece loss for USC just because of what he could do defensively, and he's shown at times the type of player, all-around player he can be, and he was really good at the end of the season. So big loss for USC because they expect to lose Isaiah Carrier as well to the NBA draft, and the fact that they are graduating Boogie Ellis, DJ Rodman, and Joshua Morgan. At least those guys will be out of eligibility. So the roster is going to look completely different next year. USC will see who they can go into the portal and try to get, as well as add to the three-man class that they already have.
Yeah, right. Grizzly Adams had a beard.
Grizzly Adams did have a beard.
Good to know.
He did. He did, in fact. Shotgun, we are going to take our break for this show. You're going to listen to some ads, I'm sorry. But when we come back, we'll have some questions and a little take it or leave it, Shotgun. Ooh. So we'll be right back after this break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We're back. Shotgun. We didn't really do anything. We just kind of sat here for like 10 seconds of silence, which was nice to share the silence with you, Shotgun. I don't know
the
if... It feels better when I'm in the room with you and not over, you know, a computer. I get to feel that that connection. So before we get to our take it or leave it, we have some questions. And we've been kind of light on questions, but we did it a day earlier to fill in some questions. So we got a bunch here. I know we're on a time crunch a little bit. We're on a schedule. So we'll answer these with some pace.
Rare for us.
We're just going to jump into it. We have one from Eric Carino. What's the difference between unofficial and official visits? Well, an official visit is completely paid for by the school that you're visiting. So if Shotgun wants to officially visit Tennessee, well, then Tennessee is going to book him a flight. They're going to book his family flights. They're going to put him up in a hotel. Again, they're paying for it. You get to they get to take you out to dinners. They get to, and they'll pay for it, and they host you around the campus and the city. So basically, what can I say is that it's just paid for by the university. And it, you know, it's not like they give you tickets to go see events around town. It's strictly within the campus. You know, they'll take you to dinner or in the city. And then with unofficial visit, pretty much you're paying your own way. You know, they're not paying for your flight out here. They're not putting you up in a hotel. It's entirely through your own money. So that's the major difference between these two types of visits, unofficial and official. And you usually see the official visits happen in the summer and then during the season. So there's only certain points when you can take official visits. There's only certain points you can take unofficial visits as well. But that is the main difference.
The biggest difference, yes, the money. There's also the schedule difference. There are periods, there are recruiting periods where coaches are allowed or teams are allowed to host people on campus. Unofficial visit, like, you could just stop by whenever. Like, that's technically an unofficial visit. Like,
sure.
You go up and you want to watch a track event and you stop by the coach's office. Like, technically that would be an unofficial visit. I just went up to USC's campus the other day. I visited. Unofficially, though. The official visit is just, it's paid for because the NCAA only allows a certain amount of official visits for each school. And previously, student-athletes were only allowed 5 official visits. So you could go to 5 different schools. And now it's unlimited, but schools are limited still to the number that they're allowed. And I think it's something like 75 or something like that. Like, somewhere in that range, right, Chris?
Yeah.
In there. So it's not like they can just say, every top 300 player, every player in the 247, we're going to invite you out and come, you know, you guys come out and have a free meal or whatever. And the official visits, they go all out, at least under Lincoln Riley. You know, that's where we've seen the luau.
The yachts.
We've seen the yacht. We've seen, you know, them renting out crypto.com or whatever it's called now, Staples Center, and having breakfast there. You know, they take the players to Nobu out in Malibu. Those type of things, those all come on the official visit. Unofficial visit is basically we're going to stay on campus and we're going to maybe do an event. We're going to have some speakers. That's been something that, that USC has done. So you can have a big event with unofficial visits as well, which is what we saw this weekend. But the official visit is the players come in. They're in town for 3 days, basically. I think it's 72 hours that they're allowed to be on campus. So if it's an in-season visit, kids will fly out after their Friday night game. They'll come in to campus and then be there for the weekend to check out, you know, how everything goes during a game day and all that type of stuff. So it's those are kind of the biggest differences there.
Our next question comes from LA Sports. Helium Boys, what does this do to local recruiting given the recent commits? Does this show Bosco, Modern Day, and others that they will find better players? What's the positive and negative?
That's a really interesting question. You talked to more people yesterday, so I think I'm going to defer to you here just because you talked to some of the local commit – or not local commit, excuse me – local prospects that were also on the visit, you know, that came in this weekend. So what was kind of the vibe from them, and what is it kind of – what do you think it does say to those Bosco and Modern Day guys where USC hasn't gained a lot of traction recently?
Yeah, I think Lincoln Riley and the staff know that it's important to – still recruit Southern California, given that it's a talent base and every major school comes to California to recruit kids. But we've seen that Lincoln Riley and USC in general, you know, is a national brand. They're going to recruit nationally. They're going to go offer the best players, regardless if they play at, you know, a school in Georgia or a school in Virginia or a school in Orange County. They're going to offer the best, and they're not going to wait around for California kids. As you mentioned, they've struggled to get traction with guys from the Trinity League, aka Bosco and Modern Day, but they can't just wait around for it to finally click for, you know, these schools and their players to like want to come to USC. If they don't want to come to USC, they're going to recruit where they have to, because you have to fill the class. And again, they're going to recruit elite players. They're going to recruit players that they like. And yeah, I think it'll kind of it's exciting, because if you're a kid who USC is recruiting locally, you're like, wow, they're getting all this. He's getting these guys from Florida and these guys from Georgia. And yeah, I want to be a part of this. It does that. But the negative is, well, USC hasn't been recruiting well in California in the first place. I think it actually has more of a positive effect in getting local kids excited for what USC is building with a national brand, if that makes sense.
And you know, if they were able to start recruiting locally better, that's much better on the budget, to be honest, because you know, those flights to get kids to come in on those official visits, those cost money. But also, once you get them on campus and they become student-athletes, the NIL, USC, one of the big things they've done is provide flights for families to come out and be able to see the players. So instead of getting Marshawn Lloyd's family to come from Delaware and, you know, come to out to the games, well, it's a lot easier if the families can drive up from Orange County or whatever. So that's a lot cheaper on the football program budget overall.
Next question is from Anthony in L.A. Loving the recruits, but how imperative is having a college football playoff kind of season in terms of holding these recruits? I wouldn't say college football playoff, like they have to make it, but I think they at least need double-digit wins. I think if you get a 10-win season and like kind of be in the hunt and obviously show some defensive turnaround, because you're not going to keep them having the defense you had last year. And I don't expect them to have the defense that they have last year, but you need to show defensive improvement. And if Coach Eric Henderson is getting a lot out of these defensive linemen, then yeah, that's going to show on the field and that'll show in the defense. And again, I don't think they have to make the college football playoff, but just be better than they were last year. And I would say around 10 wins would be enough with an improved defense.
Progression and development. That's what players want. They want to see the program is moving forward, and they want to see the players are getting developed, and development is also the development of the program as a whole. So if that's happening, then I think you hold on to them. You know, the last time when they had Mike L. Williams committed, that was the 2021 season when everything went to hell. You know, they fired Helton and hoped that things could turn around, and it never happened. So that's, you know, if you have a terrible season, then you'll lose everybody. Similar to the 2012 season when that Gerard likes to mention, with, you know, the class that had Max Brown and Sua Cravens and Chris Hawkins, but also had Jalen Ramsey and a couple other players that were committed to USC. And instead, that class falls apart because USC went from the number one preseason team to going 6-5 and losing the Sun Bowl. So it's all about, okay, well, if you go from preseason number one to 6-5, the program is not heading in the right direction, and that's when you're going to lose those big-time players. So that's the big thing. It's just showing that the trend is upward for USC this season.
I'm going to a question from Gustavo. Shadi and Chrissy T, which young players or backups last season do you think have the best opportunity this spring to make their case to be on the two deep in fall? One that jumps into my head immediately is Tobias Raymond. I know Shotgun talked about him earlier, but a guy who's put on a tremendous amount of weight. He's a redshirt freshman. People want to see what he plays like on the field now that he's 300 pounds plus after, you know, signing as a 250-pound, 6'7" lineman. So you got the body, you got the mass on him. Now he's got to go out there and show it on the field. And I think he is a great candidate to move up because they need tackles and a guy that they're banking on showing development this season.
I mean, there's lots of them, actually.
Yeah, there's tons.
There's
of
a
them.
Good number of guys. Braylon Shelby stands out as somebody mm-hmm. who will be in the mix, should get a lot more playing time this season, even though he'll be, you know, him and Jamal Muhammad are playing the same position. I think Shelby will just get a lot more playing time. You can look even at Eric Gentry. You know, he's a potential guy that steps up there. Jacoby Covington didn't play a ton last year because he got injured, was about to be in the starting lineup or was in the starting lineup. Same thing with Zion Branch. Both those guys were in the starting lineup and then immediately got hurt after working their way up. I think those guys will be on the two deep at minimum. If not, Covington will be starting, I'm pretty sure, along with John Humphreys. But DeCarlos Nicholson could factor into that as well. Mason Murphy needs to take that step forward. You know, wide receivers, all those young guys, they'll be in the two deep. So there's a good number of guys because USC lost some quality impact players. Quentin Joyner is going to be on the two deep mm-hmm. if they don't go out and get another veteran guy. And that'll be an interesting one to me because they have four running backs. That's enough. They've done that in the past. Now, honestly, I think you would like to have someone like Matt Colombo back, like the emergency walk-on that can actually play a little bit. Like, can they get a walk-on that comes in the fall that, you know, is a guy that in an emergency they could actually use in there rather than having to move a wide receiver or something? But if they're confident in Quentin Joyner's ability to be the number two, the 1A, or the 1B, excuse me, then maybe we don't see them go out and get a running back. So that'll be. I'm curious to see how that one kind of plays out. And then on the defensive line, you could see guys step up. You know, Bear Alexander is going to be there, obviously, and then who's going to be around him? You know, is it going to be Braylon Shelby? Is it just going to be Isaiah Rakes and Nate Clifton coming in, or are we going to see some guys take a step forward? Elijah Hughes looks a lot bigger. He's a guy that showed some intriguing qualities when he was in there last year. We'll see him. And then can they tap in to get Anthony Lucas tapped in to the potential talent that he has? You know, that's a guy that has freakish abilities if they can get it all in the right direction and whatnot. And wasn't happening last year, so we'll see if the coaching staff this year can do it.
We're going to do last two questions, both from Samuel. The first one is a USC question. The second is a little bit of a fun question. Were you surprised that they didn't really go after any offensive linemen during the early portal window? Do you think results during spring could change that approach? I'm talking starter types, not just depth pieces. Yeah, this was interesting. I think it was a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B with them being, you know, happy with the development that the freshman class has shown from last season, you know, that Elijah Page, Tobias Raymond group. And then also, you know, if you look back to their additions from the previous cycle, they didn't all pan out and some had their struggles. So I think they were just being a little bit more selective of the offensive linemen that they were going to pursue in that first portal window. I think spring will have a lot of impact on how aggressive they are for this spring window, but I think they need to be pretty aggressive in getting another tackle regardless, aka Marcus Bryant. So I think they were just being more selective during that first window after the mixed results they had last season. But again, that's just my opinion on it.
Could be just them being selective. We don't know for sure if they didn't go after anyone. I mean, they could have gone after some guys, didn't get them, and just because transfer portal recruiting is not the same as high school recruiting. Like, we don't get full updates on these are my top three, these are my top five. You know, this is what I like about every school. It's usually like, I'm in the portal, a week later, I'm committed. And, you know, I'm excited to go to this new school.
You kind of know what school you're going to.
A lot of times before you go in the portal. Yeah. So you've had someone reach out behind the scenes, all that type of stuff, or you've texted players on the other team, all those type things. So, but USC could have been in the mix for some guys and just, you know, that wasn't out there publicly. So I don't think that necessarily they didn't look at offensive linemen. Maybe they didn't like the options that were out there. And I think just very much what you said, the mixed results of the last 2 years may have, you know, made them a little bit more cautious about how they kind of approach the offensive line transfer portal recruiting this year.
And the last one, and since there doesn't seem to be any other questions, just shotgun hate. A fun question too. Celebrity boxing matches have become a big thing in recent years. If you had to take part in one, which celebrity would you want to fight and why?
I don't know. I didn't think about this one. I should have thought about this one more. I just want to win, Chris.
Right. You got some reach into the arms. You should go after someone like Shorter.
Yeah, Danny DeVito. I got it.
Danny DeVito? Why would you want to fight Danny DeVito? He's a treasure.
That's true. I'm trying to think of people that I don't like, and I'm not very good at that. What do you got, Chris?
I was thinking Timothy Chalamet.
Because he's super skinny?
Yeah, he's super skinny. It's like a running joke that I love.
Is this something with Dune?
No, not something with Dune, but just it's a running joke that I love Timothy Chalamet. I don't love Timothy Chalamet. I think he's fine. But I think it would just be fine. It would just be funny to box Timothy Chalamet.
If they count as celebrities, then I would get some political analyst.
Okay.
Because they're all annoying and...
Who's the bald guy? Carver?
Carver? I don't know. You're talking about the old guy?
Yeah, the old guy.
that's not nice, Chris. That's elderly abuse.
Let me see. James Carville.
Carville, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Carville. I'm not fighting an elder. But just some political analyst because, one, I'm almost certain there's no athleticism at all there and they can't fight. They just will try to talk their way through it. It'll be like a South Park bit or something. They'll be trying to talk, and I'll just be trying to punch. So,
I changed my answer. Tommy Tuberville. I want to box that dude.
That would be a good one.
I want to box that
very,
dude.
He's very annoying.
He's very punchable face. Just very punchable face. He's 69. Nice. definitely. I changed my answer. It's that guy. I'm fighting Tommy Tuberville, and that's that. Also. I would also, he's not a celebrity, but I want to box the guy who caught that block in the, what was the NCAA game? Was it Oakland?
Oh.
Was it the Oakland game?
No, it wasn't.
It was Oakland. It was, what was it? Dang it.
Western Kentucky?
No, Western Kentucky is not. What is it? This is going to bug me. That was an amazing block. What game was it?
Samford, Kansas.
Yes. I want to fight. Not even like boxing, like straight up knuckle brawl.
Was it Tony Padilla that I know he was on the crew and he is a much maligned referee from West Coast coaches. From coaches I've talked to, no one really appreciates him as a referee. And I know he was on that crew and he often makes a lot of calls that I do not think are very good calls. But I do not know if he's the one that actually called.
Is he the Angel Hernandez of college basketball?
Probably so. That's probably a good answer there.
Okay, Shotgun, those are all our questions. I'm going to run through some quick take it or leave it that I just kind of made up literally a minute before we went on air because I wanted to do a little something fun because it's we're in studio together. Number one, take it or leave it. Jonah Monheim doesn't start at any other spot other than center.
I'm going to take it. I think he's going to lock it up. And, you know, I think they wanted that consistency with him and Miller Moss working together to identify the fronts and stuff. I think his intelligence and his cerebral nature will be really good for Miller Moss as a first-time starter. You know, those guys kind of working together, I think that will do well with each other. I think they'll play off of each other really well.
Take it or leave it, Braylon Shelby starts at least 7 games this season.
Starts?
Yes. He's thinking, folks. He's thinking. I always know it's a good one when he's got to think about it, when he's got to ponder a little bit. He's got the eye squinting a little bit.
I'm going to leave it.
Oh, okay. 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 But you do think...
I think he'll play a bunch, but...
You think he starts any games?
Yeah. It's hard to say just because I don't know what kind of fronts they're going to necessarily go with, and because we don't get to see a ton, see a tiny bit, is like where... What we saw on day two, what I saw on day two, is not what we're going to see in game two. So there's going to be changes. Guys are going to move from position to position as they figure out different things in the defense, and you know, they're going to decide whether they want to run a 3-4 front or a 4-2-5 front. You know, those different things will all kind of shape out as they figure out what kind of players they have with a new defense.
Take it or leave it, Zachariah Branch once again scores a punt and a kickoff return this season.
Take it. He's electric, man. Okay. I know it's going to be hard for someone to
kick it to him.
But someone will make that mistake.
Someone will make.
So close to breaking like 3 more punts. I think it was 3 times he got tackled basically right in front of me, and I was like, I told him when he came into the studio when we had him on him and his brother on the Tunnel Vision, was that I told him, I'm going to go stay in the end zone, so when you get tackled next time, at least it'll be a touchdown. Because yeah, it just kept happening right in front of me. I was like,
Notre Dame, Washington?
Notre Dame and Washington both were 2 of them, and I think there was 1 more as well.
Take it or leave it. This is a little bit of a quasi one, but take it or leave it. Deuce Robinson hits a home run this spring.
I'm going to take it because they still are struggling. Baseball lost the series to UCLA after having their biggest win in 20 years, 22 years, over UCLA, biggest rivalry win on Friday, and then unfortunately lost to the next 2 games. They're close games, but they got to find a way to win, and they've had a kind of a black hole in left field, which is where he plays, so they haven't got consistent production there, so I think he'll get in and he'll get a hold of one. And I was going to say this for War Room, and I'll also put it in the War Room, but I had a coach tell me,
if you're going to say it now, how's it going to go in the War Room?
Not everybody's going to listen to the Healing Boys podcast, so this is for the rest of the people, and I'll add a little bit to it. But
I'm going to beat this whole thing out.
I had a coach tell me that it has been exponential, his growth, from when a baseball coach tell me from when they got him in January to now. And so the more and more reps he gets, the more opportunities that he gets, the better he's going to get. And that's every day in batting practice and everything else. So I think that eventually he'll break his way into the lineup for at least a spot start here or there, and he'll get a hold of one.
All right, the last one, Shotgun. I asked Jacoby Lane this on Tuesday. Take it or leave it, a 40-inch vertical is what he's been tested at. For context, the highest vertical at this past combine was 42.5 inches. The combine record is 46 inches. Jacoby Lane stated he recorded a 40-inch vertical at USC testing. Shotgun, take it or leave it.
That he actually did it?
Yes, that's a true number, because a lot of people were saying that's cap. That's cap. There's no way that's possible. So I just want Shotgun's opinion on it.
I think it's quite possible. Have you seen him jump?
I have seen him jump. Ridiculous. I think it's absolutely legit. Why would he have? Why would he lie? Why would he tell me 48 inches? He could have told me 45 inches, and that would have been enough.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's legit. I'm gonna take it. You remember there was an N1 basketball player. I think his name was just like 50.
The professor.
Not the professor.
That's the only one I know.
But I think his name was like, it was 50 or something off of
his vertical.
Yeah, because he had a 50 inch vertical. So, yes, I think it's quite possible, and I think that he did it.
Oh yeah, 50. I see it. I see it. Oh, hot sauce. I remember that one too.
Oh, hot sauce was really good too.
Hot sauce too. Are there any others? Skip to My Lou. Is that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's Ray for Alston, who actually played the NBA.
Oh, the main event. I don't know that one.
Mm-hmm.
The remember professor, that one? Obviously. A.O.?
A.O., yep.
What does it mean?
A.O.!
Oh, okay.
Because that's what the guys would say every time, and that was his initials as well.
Spider. Of course, 50 is the only one that doesn't have a Wikipedia thing I can and I can go down or whatever, but yes, okay.
Spider was a high flyer as well.
Is that a rhyme? Spider was a high flyer? Is that the thing, or you just...
No.
That just came out like
he
that?
He was a high flyer.
Okay.
Yeah, so I watched the man one at times. That was my youth.
Did you have Anwan shoes or apparel?
Not intentionally. I may have had something. I don't know.
I need to get you an Anwan hat.
I've never been like intentionally going out. I got to get Nike this or whatever. I just whatever looks good, I'm grabbing.
Do you think Shotgun works as an Anwan nickname?
Yeah, probably.
Does it? I don't know. It doesn't.
Or some derivation from there, as everyone makes their own derivation of it. So.
Shotgun says.
No, it would be like if I'm like would make a three or something, I'd be like Shotty or something.
Oh,
like that.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's good.
Because that was the thing about Ant-1, it was the hype guy. That was the thing that stood out the most. Mm. I mean, the players were fantastic and could do, you know, unique things, but it was the hype guy. That was what was so unique to me when you would watch it, is the guy standing at half court and just is describing everything and trying to, you know, hype everyone up all the time.
Getting those jokes off, yep. Getting the crowd. Yeah, absolutely. I see it now. I see the vision. I think 10K works as a N1 name. So
yeah, I think the hype man would go low tone. 10K. Something like that.
He's been thinking about it for a while. I just wanted to get off. Shotgun, that's it. That's our show. The first ever in studio Helium Boys podcast. The first one. I hope it's not the last.
Who knows? We'll see.
Who knows? We'll see. Very ominous for him.
Chris, do we have any shout-outs today?
We do not have any shout-outs. Just a reminder, I will shout-out anyone that buys a Helium Boys merch, and you can buy that at theparastyleshop.com. Get a piece of merchandise with our literal faces on them. I can't wait to see them. I hope
very
I see some.
Very Ant-1-esque.
Very Ant-1-esque, yes. Very Ant-1-esque type shirt. You would see it at a Ant-1, like, tent if you went to an Ant-1 event. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We would have sold so many of these on the Ant-1 circuit.
We would have crushed. Maybe I'll design an Ant-1 shirt, like an actual Ant-1 shirt for us. I'll keep that in the back of my mind. But yeah, no shout outs. But again, if you buy one, I will shout you out at the end of this podcast right here. This is the moment right here. It's like, you know that those billboards you see, this could be your advertisement. This could be your shout out right here. This could be it. This could be it. I could be saying your name, Jessica, Steven, Toby. These are just names. I don't know. Give me a real name to shout out and I will do it. Shotgun, that's going to wrap us up. I know you got some things to do. I got a lot of things to do.
Oh.
So we will catch you next time on Helium Boys. I almost said Composite 2-Star Recruits. I am not. I do want to end with
First.
Okay.
Got to say, if you're not subscribed to the Peristyle, you're missing out. There's a 50% off deal on, I believe, an annual membership right now. With how much recruiting molten lava is going around Heritage Hall and the McKay Center, you're going to want to make sure you're signed up so you can read the quotes from the players themselves and you can hear what they're saying about USC, about Eric Henderson, about the defensive staff, and then as well as seeing Chris's ghost notes for this 5:30 a.m. practice that's coming up tomorrow, and all those things. If they're you can need to sign up just to see if those ghost notes end up being coherent or not.
They won't, but you will make sure they do because you edit the ghost notes them. So
eventually.
It's all on you. Eventually. But yeah, the first edition, maybe not so much. I'm Chris. That is Shotgun. Catch us on an N1 court near you, and we'll catch you next time. I'm a little disappointed. There's no treat.